Another type of bond are what we call 501c3 bonds, and that's what 501c3 institutions can benefit from. Generally, they have to be issued through a conduit issuer, so a governmental party has to issue the bonds and then lend it to the 501c3 borrower. They come with a few extra rules. Again, with the federal government, they seek to provide a few more restrictions on those types of bonds, given that it's not a direct governmental benefit. There's a third type of bond that we're really not going to cover in the session today, but are called private activity bonds. And those types of bonds, the federal government recognizes the fact that there is a lot of private business use and some private benefit associated with them, but the types of projects that they finance are seen to be for the public benefit. Examples of those are, airport bonds. There might be bonds for affordable housing, certain water projects that might have private involvement. And so if you hear in the news that tax-exempt bonds had been issued for those types of projects, you know that's why.
I would just add that governmental entities can issue 501c3 bonds, so you could have a reason why a state college, if it were going to enter into contracts with, say, a bunch of other 501c3 entities. Occasionally, state and local universities will nevertheless issue 501c3 bonds. It's possible.
Well, there's another type of debt out there that's taxable debt, right?
We don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. If you issue taxable debt, you could take this whole session and just kind of throw it away.
And my job.
Yeah, mine too.
And so we talked a little bit about how qualified 501c3 bonds have a few extra things that need to be done in addition to how governmental bonds are issued. And some of the differences include that 100% of the property, if you're issuing 501c3 debt, has to be owned by a 501c3 entity or a governmental entity. Governmental bonds, there's a little bit more flexibility with regard to who the owner is. They also are subject to a public approval requirement, also known as a TEFRA hearing. So if you hear somebody throw out the term TEFRA hearing, they're talking about a requirement to publish in a local newspaper or through, now there are new rules that allow you to do it on through a website, but to hold a public approval hearing and then have a somebody who's been elected through a governmental office to approve that debt. It's just a way that the federal government ensures that there's been public input in the process of issuing the debt. The private business use limitation is a little bit more restricted. Brian will talk a little bit later about how, even though there are restrictions on private business use for governmental debt, you are allowed up to 10% of private business use. But when you issue 501c3 bonds, that limit goes down to 5%. And that includes use by the whatever entity may not be a 501c3. But it can get kind of tricky, too, because if a 501c3 entity is using the property in a way that's unrelated to their 501c3 purpose, then that can also be counted towards that 5% of bad use. The cost of issuance that are bond financed are also more limited in 501c3 bonds, only up to 2% of the bond issue can be used towards cost of issuance, things like paying the underwriter, paying the lawyers, any of those cost of issuance, and that 2% counts towards your 5% of bad use. And then finally, there are a few more reporting issues that entities who are 501c3s that have issued bonds, they have to complete the Form 990 Schedule K. And so there are reporting requirements that come with the issuance of 501c3 bonds.
And I would say that just because the entity that's issuing the debt is a C3, that doesn't mean that they don't qualify as a governmental issuer. So I think for the most part, this would apply to governmental institutions. So we have supporting organizations that are separately incorporated under the state of Florida. And because of their status and oversight within the state of Florida and by our constitution, they qualify as a governmental issuer themselves, even though they're a C3 organization. And Victoria, I think you said it was a special K that they issue with their 990, right?
Yeah, exactly. They have special rules with respect to their Schedule K, so I jokingly refer to it as the special K of the 990. So let's, now that we've kind of talked about tax-exempt bonds very generally and how they're structured. We thought we'd talk through or go through sort of the main rules regarding tax-exempt obligations. And so we're going to go through them in the following order. Probably the biggest two sets of rules that you'll hear referred to in tax-exempt bonds are the arbitrage rules and the private business use rules. But we're also going to talk a little bit about record retention and corrective actions because those are very important in the day-to-day post-issuance compliance world. But let's talk a little bit first about arbitrage. So arbitrage is the result of borrowing in the tax-exempt market and then investing in the taxable market. And it could be positive or negative in terms of actual numbers. And now since the 2008 crisis, we've been in a market of negative arbitrage for a very long period of time where your bond yield is actually going to be higher than what you could really earn investing the bond proceeds. So we haven't had to really deal with any of the hard issues related to arbitrage for a very long period of time now. Although now that investment rates are going back up, we're going to start seeing a little bit more of having to concentrate on these arbitrage rules.